The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
We are moving to the war in the Middle East and the United Nations Refugee Agency, which has this morning said that up to 3.2 million people in Iran have been displaced since the war began almost a fortnight ago. It's an extraordinary figure. And all the while, the US President Donald Trump seems to be saying that the conflict is practically complete. But is that really the case? And is there an end in sight? Well, I'm joined by Jasmine El-Gamal, who's founder and CEO of Averroes Strategies and former Middle East advisor at the US Department of Defense. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us this morning. I mean, when I say that Donald Trump has said numerous times that this is going to be quick, we've almost achieved our aims, there's nothing left to destroy, and yet the conflict continues. People are very unsure of how long this thing is going to last. Can you shed any light on that for us? Or do you think the administration knows the answer to the question itself?
I don't. I don't think the administration knows the answer to a lot of questions that they should have thought about more clearly before entering this war. You know, one of the issues that have been coming to light over the last few days is that the administration severely underestimated Iran's capacity to retaliate and also really misunderstood how the Iranians would respond when they felt that they were existentially threatened. So you saw Donald Trump saying things like Iran has to unconditionally surrender. He didn't really understand what that would do on the Iranian side to the psyche of the Iranian regime, and how that would basically prevent any prospects for negotiation. Because in any conflict like this, no party wants to come to the negotiating table from a position of weakness. So I think that rhetoric has really caused some challenges in trying to find an off-ramp to the conflict. Mm-hmm. And so even though you see Donald Trump saying that this war is going to end soon, I suspect that he has to say that to assure the markets, which have really been going crazy over the last few days because of the oil supply disruptions. But on the ground, this doesn't look like it's ending, certainly not in the next few days.
And is it in his gift to end it? He can end the United States part in it, but Iran doesn't have to abide by that, and neither does Israel.
Exactly. You hit the nail right on the head. One of the real challenges here is that the U.S. has really backed itself into a corner where even if they want to end the war now, Iran is saying, we're not going to end it on your terms. We're going to end it on our terms. Now, from Iran's perspective, they need to make sure that this war ends having exacted such a high cost on the Americans and the Israelis and the region that they don't try to attack Iran 6 months down the road or a year down the road. And on the Israeli side, this is interesting too. This is where you're going to see Israeli objectives and American objectives start to diverge slightly, because while the Americans don't need to go to full regime change in Iran, this is an Israeli objective. And so you also might start seeing some tensions there.
Okay. So looking then at the aims of this war, again, it is something that is the American administration and Donald Trump himself. It seems as though they find it difficult to define what those aims are, what the ambition is, what will be considered a successful outcome. Can you shed any light on that for us?
Absolutely. And it's not only just failing to highlight their objectives and having achievable objectives, it's also determining at what point can they declare victory and then how do they exit the war. That type of planning, which we used to do at the Pentagon all the time when I worked during the Obama administration, wasn't really fully matured before they entered into this war. So I think the best Donald Trump can do really in the coming days is one he's already doing, which is telling the American people, we've achieved all of our military targets, their missile production is down, you know, they're not going to be able to pose a threat to us again. The other thing he needs to start doing is ratcheting down that rhetoric against the Iranians, trying to move towards slightly ever more conciliatory language that's not existentially threatening the Iranian regime, and then hoping that the Iranians respond in kind and then use that as an off-ramp.
And the former Director General of the World Trade Organization was with us a little earlier, Pascal Lamy. He said the prospect of the United States midterms could force Donald Trump's hand. I mean, do you think that we're going to get to that point where the pinch point is domestic politics, or will he have the judgment to pull back long before that comes into play?
Well, I mean, he can't really keep going that much further. I mean, this war is costing the U.S. billions, and Congress is going to have to approve any supplemental packages that the administration requests. So he doesn't have a blank check to continue this war for as long as he wants. He's getting pressure from Congress. He's getting pressure from the American people, who do not understand why their gas prices are rising and why the U.S. is mired in another war in the Middle East. And of course, global energy markets too. The International Energy Agency has just said that this war has caused the largest supply disruption in history in global oil markets. So he's going to have to take all of that into account. And I'll just say one last thing. Every weapon, every missile that the U.S. uses up in this war that is going to take weeks or months to resupply is a weapon that they cannot give to the Europeans when they've already paid for those weapons. And it's a weapon that they cannot use in another war. So you have, for example, our allies in the Pacific watching this closely, really wondering, if anything happens in the South China Sea or with Taiwan, will the U.S. be able to come to their aid? So there's a lot more geopolitical ramifications to this than just Israel and the U.S. and Iran.
Jasmine, thank you very much for the benefit of your knowledge today. Jasmine El Gamal there joining us. Now, there has been a new snow and ice warning issued for 11 counties. This is across the south and west coasts on Thursday night. This is coming to us from Met Éireann. So we have Cork, Kerry, Limerick, Tipperary, Waterford, Donegal, Galway, Leitrim, Mayo, Sligo and Wicklow included in this status yellow warning, coming into effect at 9 o'clock on Thursday night, that's tonight, until 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. And then pretty much every other county is subject to a status yellow rain warning, which is currently in place right across Connacht and parts of Leinster as well. So we're in for some pretty awful weather by the looks of things, according to Met Éireann. 21 people have been charged in the United Arab Emirates because of footage they have taken and broadcast or shown or used on their social media channels of missiles. Joining me now to tell me more is CEO of Detained in Dubai, Radha Sterling. Radha, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So we have arrests and charges in relation to this. What are these people alleged to have done?
Well, there's 21 people in one group who have been charged, and one British national so far has been identified. We're liaising with his family, and there could very well be more in that group. Now, he took a video overhead. He was in Dubai, looked up, saw a missile and took a video himself. He was asked to delete the video, which he did, and he's also been charged under the same cybercrime violations as this other group. And it's really vague. I've read the charge sheet, and it says, you know, it could be taking a video, it could be sharing disinformation, it could be promoting an idea that could, you know, pollute the minds of those in Dubai or cause panic. It's really, really vague, and we're not exactly sure whether he's being charged with crimes committed by other people.
So he hasn't.
That's how vague it is.
Just to be clear, he hasn't published that on his social media. He just took the video and then deleted it. Is that right?
Well, that seems to be the case, yes. But again, the charge sheet's very vague. So perhaps other people shared it. And you can also be arrested for just commenting or resharing someone else's post. And that's likely why there's 21 people in this particular group. Mm-hmm. Now, since then, and this is just a few hours ago that we broke this news. And since then, we've already had other people coming forward saying, you know, my sister's been arrested, my family member's been arrested again for these similar violations. I think we're going to see dozens, if not hundreds.
What might happen to these people?
Well, I'm in a kind of worst case scenario under the cybercrime laws. They would be charged with around 70,000 euros in a fine. They could be jailed for up to 2 years, maybe even more, because they could be charged with multiple violations. And then this sentence would be cumulative. They can be deported. I think the main threat for people at this stage is that maybe they won't be charged under the cybercrime laws. Maybe they'll be treated like a terrorist. They'll be taken away, interrogated, and denied access to embassies and lawyers, which is a serious risk at this particular time. We've had other French nationals just in the past couple of days taking photos in front of buildings, and then they've been arrested, interrogated. Authorities have been really hypersensitive, worried that they might be Iranian spies and so on, and they've been treating everyone in that same way. Fortunately, those gentlemen were released, but we're seeing, I think, really risky situations, and we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg. I mean, these are just the cases that we know about.
I suppose it makes sense now, because a lot of us have seen, it has been the subject of an awful lot of comment. We have seen people living in the Gulf states who have been publishing videos on their social media promoting how safe they feel in the region since the US action against Iran began.
Yes, it's really interesting. And I think, you know, it's also one of those things where some people are going to feel, OK, this is fine. I trust in the UAE government, and they're going to be, you know, they'll genuinely believe that it's safe. And then you're going to have other people who look up and see a missile. They don't care whether it's intercepted. They hear an explosion. They see debris falling. They see a man being killed and casualties. They don't want to be in the country. And that's where it's really important that in a crisis situation, everyone is able to make their own decisions for their own safety. And that means, you know, for many, leaving the country and getting home. I think there's a lot of people who are paid and incentivized to sort of portray and continue to portray Dubai as a really, really safe city. They don't want to lose that image just because of this conflict with Iran. And so that's really important that they keep that facade up. And you've also got other people who are incentivized for their own reasons. They want to live in Dubai. They like the lifestyle. And therefore, they kind of jump on the bandwagon of saying it's absolutely safe here. And from what we can see with our own eyes, it's just not.
Radha, thank you very much for joining us. Radha Sterling is CEO of an organization called Detained in Dubai.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.